Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello, and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where three non-historians pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. I'm Anna, and I'm here with my two friends, Will and Ant.
Hello.
Hi.
This week, we're talking about the year 10 BCE. That's right, 10. What happens if we get zero, if the random
there
number
is no
generator...
Year zero. There is no year zero.
No, I'm saying, but what happens if the random number generator...
No, the RNG knows not
okay.
to do zero.
Okay, great.
Don't question it.
It's not an available year for it to choose.
Okay, yeah, good.
It's scientifically
great.
Calibrated.
Good. Now that we've got that out of the way, I'd like your three-word summaries, please, William. Did you forget to do
Did
a three-word summary?
A three-word summary?
Yeah.
Okay. What are the first three words that pop into your head?
Nice...
Nice.
Bad name.
Okay. It's wonderful.
Oh my gosh.
It's just a captain of improv.
It is a new thing we've started doing this.
It's a full stop. There's a full stop between nice and bad. So it's nice. Nice.
Yeah.
Bad name.
Okay. Okay. Yes. Okay. Okay. Cool. Got it. Ant?
Oxbow Lakes.
Oh. Oxbow.
Oh.
Is one word.
Oxbow Lake's good.
May I interest you in nice Oxbow Lakes? Okay, and my three words are nice, Romans, Germans.
Good.
Great. Well, that clears everything up, so let's go ahead and get started. All right, I'm up first today, and I was really going to try to avoid doing anything about Rome this week, but it turns out that you can't escape them, especially because 10 BCE is during Augustus's rule, and it's the beginning of
the Pax Romana,
so the empire is huge and prosperous and well-documented, and everywhere else I was looking at was like, we found some coins that maybe this guy was alive in 10 BC, so Rome it is. Thankfully, there's quite an interesting guy in the mix at this time, the very originally named Nero Claudius Drusus, commonly known as Drusus, D-R-U-S-U-S. He was a general and politician who was a key part of Augustus's expansionist campaigns in Europe. And he was Augustus's stepson. And of course, there were rumors that Augustus was his real father. Because
classic Roman.
Classic Roman. And in also classic Roman things, Drusus is the brother of future Emperor Tiberius, father of Claudius, grandfather of Caligula, and great-grandfather of Nero.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So he's a well-placed guy, important guy.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when he's just 23, he leads some campaigns in the Alps on behalf of Augustus, sometimes fighting alongside his brother Tiberius, who was also like genuinely his best friend, which I think is so sweet. We have so many stories of like brothers murdering each other mm-hmm. for the crown and whatever. But one source I read referred to them as the Claudius brothers.
The Claudius
brothers. Which is just so sweet.
But did one of them inexplicably die suddenly or something?
No. Well, spoiler alert, yes, but the cause was horse, not brother.
Ah. Oh.
Yeah.
Conspiring horses.
Exactly.
And his brother wasn't a horse, obviously. That would be ridiculous.
Hold on, let me just check my notes. I don't think he was.
No, that would be, because that would be ridiculous. His brother wasn't a horse.
His brother was not a horse.
Okay.
I
shouldn't have. That was unlikely.
We know of. So in 13 BC, Drusus is appointed governor of Gaul, which is modern day France and bits. And he establishes the Drusian foot as a unit
the
of
Drusian foot.
No, Drusus was not the horse. Okay. Tiberius was the horse.
How big is a Drusian foot?
It is slightly bigger than the foot is
foot.
Now. Yeah. Okay. It was 13.1 inches.
What's that in metric?
One third of a meter.
I don't know.
Almost great. Exactly, really? Actually. Yeah, okay. I think a meter is 39 inches.
Yeah, about that. Yeah,
yeah so... Suck okay. it, maths. So yeah, that's just a sidebar. I think it's a pretty cool thing to have named after you, the Drusian foot. In less interesting news, he also begins a series of campaigns against Germanic tribes along the Rhine River, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
importantly, he becomes the first Roman general to reach the Weser and Elbe rivers, which are, you know, really up there in mm-hmm. Germany.
They're pretty up there.
Pretty up there, I would say, as far as German rivers go. And he leads a succession of campaigns starting in 12, 11, and 10 BCE. He fights all these different Germanic tribes. Some of them he convinces to become allies. Some of them he just sort of slaughters and moves on. and he's just pushing the borders of Rome north. And in addition to the military campaigns, he's constructing several new forts and roads. Mm. Which help facilitate Roman control.
Classic Roman stuff.
Classic Roman
Absolute
stuff.
Classic Roman stuff.
He's also encouraging the development of Roman culture. Classic Roman stuff in Germania, which is what this part is called. On the plus side, Drusus engendered huge amounts of loyalty in his troops. They loved the guy. On the minus side, pretty brutal towards the Germanic tribes from time to time. Sources talk about considerable bloodshed and that he was pillaging everything in his way, which, if you ask me, is not very paxful.
That doesn't. It's not okay.
That's how language works.
Paxful, good. You should be ashamed of yourself.
Will is literally face palming. Okay, but there's no doubt that he was a very skillful general. And in 9 BCE, he's elected consul. And because of this, he's entitled to achieve Rome's highest and rarest military honor.
He gets slimed.
Nickelodeon
style.
He gets slimed on stage at the Kids' Choice Awards.
Does he get a triumph?
He doesn't get a triumph. He had a triumph, I think. Okay. Or his son had triumph. Anyway.
I have a triumph.
Triumphs were happening.
What?
Like, I do. Like a motorbike triumph.
Different
brand.
Different.
Okay.
It's a different thing?
Okay. Yeah, it's a different thing. This is called the Spolia Opima.
Spolia Opima sounds like a healthy breakfast, like made from bulgur wheat.
Yeah, exactly. You can just sprinkle a little Spolia Opima on your yogurt, and it's really good for you.
Acai in there as well.
Mm-hmm. Acai.
Acai?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
It's not.
It is.
It's the one word in English that is spelt how it's
spelled.
Well,
it's not English. It's Portuguese,
what?
I think. Acai? Yeah.
I don't want to believe that.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, just keep saying acai. Anyway, so when he's not eating acai fruit, so he's eligible for spolia opima, which is when you take the armor and weapons of an enemy king or chieftain after defeating them in single combat.
Oh, yes.
And that's then you, cool. Yeah, then you like affix the armor to an oak tree and carry the oak tree up the Capitoline Hill and dedicate it at the temple of Jupiter Feretrius.
Yeah. No, I did that in 2017.
Oh, did you? Yeah. That's so funny because according to my notes, he was the fourth and final Roman general to achieve it.
Yes.
Okay.
That's right.
Oh, but you weren't a Roman general.
I think we're all absolutely clear I'm not a Roman general.
Yeah.
Did you think I was a Roman general?
You look like a fool, Anna.
You're right. I'm sorry. So as Will knows, spolia opima is a very important honor.
I mean, is that as good as good gut biome with a healthy Bulgar wheat-based breakfast? I don't think so.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
That's why I was confused, because we don't call it that. We call it okie-okie armor walk.
Right. So
he
really wants to do the okie-okie armor walk. Yeah. So he actually goes seeking out Germanic warlords that he can defeat in single combat. Because why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But legend has it that as he pressed north, he saw an apparition of this enormous Germanic woman who warned him against proceeding any farther and that his death was near. So he turned back.
Oh.
But not all the way back, because he did find, sources think, 3 chieftains and defeat them in, quote, dazzling displays of single combat.
And there are witnesses, multiple witnesses?
Multiple witnesses.
All Roman.
All
his mates.
All Roman. Well, you're not going to trust non-Roman witnesses.
Also, why
witnesses.
Would you agree to that? I was like, I'm a Germanic tribe leader. I've got loads of Germanic tribesmen.
Yeah.
They've got axes. I've got an axe. I'm not very good at fighting because I've been, you know, sitting back and not campaigning for a while, but I'm going to succumb to this. I'm going to agree to your one-on-one combat.
I think, well, in my mind, it's like a sort of a very hairy, bearded man in like pelts.
Please stop describing your fantasies to our listeners. And they're all greased up and...
No, but you know, he's like angry, and then like Drusus walks up in mm-hmm. a silver sort of like armor, draws his sword.
Yeah, and then they kiss.
Sorry, can we stop recording for a minute? I'll be right back. And we're back. Yeah, so he does slay some chieftains. You can read more about it on fanfiction.net.
/. Desperate Girl 69.
Randomly history.
Randomly horny.
So he does achieve spolia opima, we think. But unfortunately, he wouldn't live to see his own okie-okie ceremony.
Oh.
Because in 9 BCE, while he's riding back to Rome, he falls off his horse.
Oh, he fell off his brother.
He fell off his brother horse. And he survives the initial fall, but his wounds are infected, and he dies about a month later, probably from gangrene, at just 29.
Oh, yeah.
So
wow.
Really, really accomplished guy for being that young.
But bit of a klutz.
Bad horse. And I don't like blaming the horse.
Poor workman blames his
horse. Yeah. However, while he's dying, he apparently refuses to be brought back to Rome, and he writes a letter to his brother Tiberius complaining about Augustus and suggesting that they try to get the Roman Republic to return. I think Augustus doesn't hear about this, though, because Drusus is given a million different honors and fancy burials and such when his remains are eventually brought back to Rome. My favorite honor was that the Senate proclaimed him Fecundi Ingeni, which means fecund genius, which I really love.
That's really, really good.
And I want to be called that. Just putting it out there into the universe. If anyone wants to answer, that's great.
Nobody wants to answer.
Okay. Sorry, this fecund genius will keep going on. So Drusus's death really slowed Roman expansion into Germany, and the series of guys that succeeded him up there were just not up to the task. And ultimately, the Romans would lose all the territory he had gained, which is a bummer. But one final fun fact about Drusus is that...
I kind of know where you're coming from, but I mean, ultimately, they did lose really all the territory everywhere, didn't they?
You know what? I literally have this written in my notes. I wrote, I mean, ultimately, yeah, they lost all the territory except the city of Rome, but let's not split hairs. And then I decided, I don't need to say that. I'm really glad we're on the same wavelength. One final fun fact about Drusus is that in 2018, someone bought a bust of him from a Goodwill shop in Texas, a charity shop. which was later identified as an authentic antique dating from the late 1st century BC, wow. early 1st century CE, presumably taken by American soldiers in Germany during World War II.
Wow.
So the Germans had looted it. Some guy in the 18th century had like commissioned a Roman palace to display all his antiquities. And then the Americans looted it. It ended up at the shop in Texas. And do you want to guess how much the lady paid for it?
$20
$20
Hang on. Texas, what year?
2018.
$100
$200
Two rifles and a Big Mac.
That is the currency. $34.99
No way.
Specific.
Yeah. And there's this great picture that I will put up on the Instagram of she buckles it into her car, into the front seat of her car. Gosh. And it's just this like sad little crumbling bust with a big yellow price tag on the cheek. Yeah. It's very funny.
That's amazing. Yeah. I paid twice that for my bust of a feckin' genius.
Yeah, I know. I paid three times that to have a bust of me commissioned.
I can make you a bust if you want.
Okay,
I'm very good at marble.
Pass.
I took marble in my A levels.
You took marble.
Yeah, I took marble.
Is this a euphemism? Is it what's
no,
going
no, 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 no. That's what we call it in the biz.
Is that a club drug?
It's a club drug. Yeah, it is a club drug. I was off my snorting lines of marble, marble dust.
All right. Well,
I have emphysema.
Today, I'm going to talk about Herod Agrippa.
Get Agrippa. Wow. Sorry, I had to get that one out
early. Grip, best grip.
who I will generally refer to as Agrippa, because there are quite a few Herods in this story.
Is there? Okay.
Herod, yeah. This is Herod, by the way, of biblical fame.
The bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. So this guy is nice, but has a bad name.
Oh, nice, bad name.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's a bit like being a Hitler these days, even though if you're like a really nice, jolly, happy kindergarten school teacher Hitler.
Yeah.
And you're just like, you're just very caring and you're just like a nice guy. Joe Hitler. but obviously the name really haunts
Why
you, right?
Why are you defending Joe Hitler so much?
Because Joe Hitler's a lovely guy and he's like really cares for the children. He's like a fantastic teacher. But everyone's like, calls him Mr. Hitler.
Yeah.
It's really awkward.
That's tough.
Yeah.
We're off to a really bad start when you're defending Hitler. Hitler.
This is the whole point. Okay. We should defend Joe Hitler. We must criticize, of course, his great uncle, Adolf Hitler.
Jesus.
Okay. So it's the same for poor old Herod Agrippa, right? So he himself, not a bad guy, as we'll come to.
Okay.
His grandfather, controversial. So he was the last, this the, Agrippa was the last Jewish king of Judea from AD 41 to 44.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 50 years after the time we're supposed to talk about.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And he was born, though, in the year in question, 10 BCE.
Amazing.
So he was the son of a guy called Aristobulus the Fourth.
Aristobulus.
Oh. So there were three prior Aristobuluses. The Aristobuli. I'm not clear on how many subsequent Aristobuli there were. So this was one of the children of Herod the Great, who was Bad Herod, I think.
Bad Herod, okay.
I
didn't do this research either, so I'm not sure. I'm taking everything you say as face value.
I think Herod the Great is the Bible guy.
And his mother, it was Berenice, who was descended from Herod the Great's sibling as well.
Oh.
So Herod the Great was both Agrippa's the paternal grandfather and the maternal great uncle of Agrippa.
That is getting real circular.
That's too few generations.
Yeah, it's pretty close knit. And as people may know, so Herod the Great, Herod's grandfather was somewhat controversial. So his reign was marked by a bunch of like family intrigues. So that he had 10 wives, for instance.
Oh,
wow. He executed one of them for jealousy.
This is Herod the Great.
I'm talking about the grandfather, Herod the Great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this is like where he's come from.
Yeah.
You know? So one of those wives was executed because he got a bit jealous. So that was the kind of guy he was. And then in 7 BCE, when Agrippa was only three-ish, we're not quite sure exactly when he was born.
Yeah, of course.
King Herod at the time had both had Agrippa's father and uncle executed.
Oh, God. Wow.
In palace intrigues. And then later, basically, half the huge branch of the family then mysteriously disappeared.
Oh, geez.
All very intriguing.
Yeah. So, now I see what you mean by nice, bad name.
Yeah, nice, bad name. So he's fine. He's done nothing. He's a four-year-old at this point.
4 years old.
Right. Okay, so unfortunately for Agrippa, who by this a little bit later, once this branch of the family was just disappeared, he was like...
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Basically just an angsty teenager at the time. And
listening to Fallout Boy in his room. And
exactly.
Like, is he being raised by Herod the Great, his grandfather?
Clearly not.
No. He's not, thankfully.
Yeah, well, I'm just surprised that there's anyone else left to raise him.
Yeah, well, there's a few people knocking around the palace, but the people getting executed and disappeared quite regularly.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a dangerous time, but he's just basically being like any angsty English teenager and just, listening to Fallout Boy and chilling out.
He was English, you say? That's very surprising.
Plot twist.
Intriguing. More intrigue.
And unfortunately, and we're not really sure why, but Herod spared his whole family line. So there must have been some. There was, for some reason, there was some favoritism there. And by favoritism, it's like the threshold is just, I am not murdering you.
Yeah.
And because he was both Roman and Jewish, he managed to become close to Emperor Claudius. So he spent a whole bunch of time making sure he could travel to the court of in back in Rome and get and ingratiate himself within a circle and progressively get closer to Claudius. And then that paid off big time because Claudius then eventually appointed him back to be king of Judea later on. And he formed so he arrived, and as I said earlier, he only actually ended up doing about 3 years of kinging. So he arrived, he had this reputation for being really pious.
Okay.
Nice guy. He went down very well with the Jewish population and was basically doing a good job investing in the arts and infrastructure as any good ruler should. And then he suddenly and extremely suspiciously then died of almost certainly of poisoning by someone in the court.
Herod the Great still around or no?
Herod the Great's long dead, right? Because Agrippa has succeeded him at this point.
Yeah, fair enough.
Herod the Dead now.
Herod the Dead, but I wouldn't put it past a sort of posthumous poisoning.
Yeah.
You reckon the ghost of King Herod the Great?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Not the ghost.
Ghost of Herod the Great poisoned Herod Agrippa.
No, that's ridiculous. It was the mummy.
That's right. Because ghosts don't have corporeal form, so they can't hold
exactly.
The vial.
Exactly, it was like the... Ooh.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah, good.
So it was a mummy impression for those who are not in the room with us.
So unfortunately for the Jews at the time, his death marked the end of their hopes for Jewish independence because he was like their last great hope of this guy.
I think is that the phrase is client king? Wasn't it? I think that was the kind of phrase they called it. I just have a vague recollection.
That sounds reasonable.
Was a client king of the Roman state.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
Or,
yeah,
Judea was a client state of the Roman Empire.
No, I think he's like literally was called a client king.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's reasonable. Yeah. So he was sort of installed to sort of keep the locals on side, and but at the same time making sure that Rome's will could be implemented.
Yeah.
So I think that's fair. 50 years after he died, Flavius Josephus wrote about him. He said, Agrippa's character was gentle and his benevolence was equal for all.
Aww.
He was full of humanity for people of foreign races and also showed them his liberality. Not quite sure what that means in this context.
Okay.
But he was also helpful for his compatriots and showed them even more sympathy.
Oh.
Which actually, if you think about that, he's actually preferring the compatriots there over the foreign nationals. So it's actually a little bit...
Compatriots being the Jewish
presumably.
People. Okay, yeah.
But anyway, so Josephus gave him a really strong write-up. And
that's great. Yeah, 5 out of 5 stars.
I'm learning that I need to befriend a historian now to write my epitaph.
I'll do it.
Yeah, will you say nice things about me? I want no accuracy or...
If it doesn't have to be accurate, then sure, I'll say nice things about you.
I'm a historian.
Are you? Would you write one about me? If you would like to write my epitaph, please write in. I plan to live forever.
If you would like to kill Ant, also write in.
Let's not stoke the fires of the internet against
Don't
us.
Warn him. So Josephus gave him this amazing legacy, really, and it seems like for a while after his death, he was known as Agrippa the Great, which is like definitely overhyping the guy. He was a nice guy, but he's only in power for 3 years.
Agrippa the Average.
Yeah, so but on balance, as far as Herods go, he's one of the top
one of the top
ones,
Herods.
Really.
Yeah,
next up Herod.
Yeah,
nice bad name.
That's pretty good. I think that historian is named Josephus as well, which is an even better name.
That's a pretty good name.
But I'm not sure. I could be wrong.
I don't know.
Okay, good.
Okay, so Oxbow Lake's good.
That's right.
So first of all, to set the scene and a bit of context, we're in Rome.
Okay.
For me as well.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the first century, just to wind it back a bit, in the beginning of the first century BC, the Roman Republic was nearing its end and the Roman Empire was emerging, as we discovered, under the rule of Augustus Caesar. Augustus was consolidating power, expanding the empire, and ushering in this period of peace and prosperity known as the Pax Romana, or the Roman Pax.
Uh-huh. It was a paxful time.
It was very paxful. Yeah. And this time saw the flourishing of the arts, literature, intellectual pursuits, and one other thing. So you all know that history is my one true great love. But what is my...
Do we know that? Well,
obviously.
Okay.
What is my second great love?
Pornography.
Third. What is my third great love? Geography.
Oh,
so geography flourishes now in this time.
Of course.
Geography. Yeah.
I can't think of you without thinking of geography.
I love geography. Anyway, in the midst of the atmosphere of cultural and intellectual growth, there was a chap that was born called Strabo.
Ooh.
S-T-R-A-B-O. Strabo.
Strabo.
He was born about 64 BC in Amasia, a city in modern-day Turkey. He came from this wealthy, influential family, so that allowed him to receive this exceptionally high-class education.
Love that.
I mean, education was prevalent amongst the rich at the time. It was a sought-after thing, but he especially was able to invest in this. Total nerd. We love him.
Ugh.
He also was able to travel extensively, funded by his rich family, throughout the known world at the time. He spent time in Athens, studying under the very famous Stoic philosopher Antonidorus Kanites. Kanites?
Sure.
Yeah, such a famous Stoic philosopher, isn't
he? He is very famous.
Yeah, one of the most Stoic, I would say.
What are some of your favourite facts about him?
He was really mellow. Not very many highs of emotion or lows either. Kind of in the middle road. Yeah. Very, very Stoic.
I heard that, yeah.
He studied in Rome, and he travelled and studied in Alexandria, in the Great Library itself.
Oh, wow.
Where he learned amongst things like astronomy, maths, and... geography.
Yay!
He was extremely well-travelled and became...
Well, it's four places, isn't it?
That's Okay, at the time, if you moved more than like 3 miles away from your homestead, you were like, you know.
I mean, I've been to London and other parts of London and
you know when
Alexandria.
You know, Lord of the Rings, when Samwise is, if I take one more step, this is everyone was saying at the time.
And to be fair, it's quite hard to find, it was quite hard to find his way out from where he was born, wasn't it?
Yep. Why? Because of geography, lack of geography. Exactly.
Well, no, because he was born in Amasia.
God.
That was good. But also...
remember the name of the place long enough to make that joke.
But also...
because it's like a mate, a carom?
Yes, yeah, yeah. Well, he became an established scholar, and the reason why people didn't travel, and this will come up, lack of geography, but in 10...
Where do I go?
Pretty much. I don't know.
I haven't studied geography yet, but I can't get to the library to study geography unless I learn it.
It's a catch.
It really was.
XXII.
Yes.
That's pretty good. In 10 BC, Strabo found himself in the midst of the significant political and cultural shifts at the time.
How did he find himself? There were no maps.
We're getting to it. Oh my God. See, isn't geography really exciting?
Last one.
Caesar was solidifying the Roman Empire's control over the Mediterranean, and the empire was expanding eastward. And the expansion led to an increased contact exchange between the Greco-Roman world and the culture of the Middle East, Africa, and Asia. A whole lot of geography to cover. And so, at the same time, powerful figures such as Herod the Great, who was the in Judea we just covered, played a crucial role in shaping the region's political landscape. Herod was undertaking massive construction projects, etc. It's said that Strabo met with him as well. Ooh. So they were contemporaries.
And escaped with his life. That's not a guarantee with old Herod the Great.
It is not a guarantee. But, you know, there's a lot of wealth and prosperity is what I'm saying. And in this rich historical context, Strabo saw a niche for himself. There was a sincere lack of geographical knowledge. Maps were not centralized, just plain bad. There was no way to like understand or have a common language when speaking about geography and all that kind of stuff. And so he set out to work on his magnus opus, which is called Geographica. And this would take years to write, would provide a comprehensive view of the world as it was known to the Greeks and the Romans at the time. And it was extremely comprehensive and covered a view of history, geography and ethnography of the known world at the time. So the cultures and the peoples and stuff. And it combined first-hand observation from his extensive travels with information gathered from earlier geographical and historical works. He cited numerous sources, including the works of prominent geographers like Eratosthenes and Hippocrates, historians like Herodotus.
Yeah, there it is.
I didn't bring my glasses. And other scholars who contributed to his understanding
of the world. I've literally never seen you wear glasses, but that explains a lot.
I do wear glasses, but I don't read very well.
So just to clarify, from historians and scholars.
Yes.
Got it.
But he cited sources, which is not common to do.
No.
Like, normally, like, you just have this upspring of knowledge in a source from a person.
Yeah.
And there's no way to know where they found it out without looking at earlier works that also say the same thing.
Wikipedia would have loved him.
Yeah, he was really good. He was going to get top star rating or whatever they do on that site.
Yep. Got it.
Anyway,
that's right.
Geographica was held in extremely high regard by the scholars throughout the years, and this is evidenced by the fact that it is preserved and transmitted through the ages, and the work was widely copied and studied during the Byzantine period and eventually made its way to Western Europe, where it was translated into Latin.
Was it like maps or was it descriptions or both?
It was a combination historical geographical map.
Yeah.
TripAdvisor. type sort of situation.
Yeah. Coupon book.
Yeah. Yeah. They've had to stop cutting the coupons out.
So like Lonely Planet?
Yeah, like Lonely Planet. And so Strabo's Geographica became a crucial source of information on ancient geography.
For backpackers.
for scholars during the Renaissance and the Age of Exploration. And this was the basis by which they sort of...
Oh God, they hadn't updated it in 1400 years.
Basically, no. And I refuse to read any other source of history, geography.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, my Google Maps is based set to geography.
That's why you're always talking about Judea.
Yeah, exactly. His work, however, was not without its controversies and inaccuracies.
Okay.
He, despite his extensive travels, his worldview was undoubtedly influenced by the cultural and political biases of the time, you know, placing, you know, Rome in the center and that kind of stuff.
Mm.
For example, one of the things he thought, the Caspian Sea was connected to the Northern Ocean.
Swing and a miss.
Yeah, swing and a miss. Why is it a swing and a miss?
Because the Caspian Sea has to go, there's like a great deal of Central Asia in between the Caspian Sea and the North Sea.
Two things, Caspian Sea is landlocked, and two, the Northern Ocean doesn't exist.
Oh, okay. It's not just the North Sea.
No, no.
Okay.
It was the fictitious ocean that surrounded the entire world in the north of the Northern Hemisphere.
Aha, that's
sorry, well,
the
what,
one.
What are you suggesting surrounds the entire world? If not the Northern Sea.
A big great ice wall?
Yeah, okay. Good.
As the flat Earth connects to it.
That's you fine. Almost caught him, but he's died in the wall.
But yeah, so in fact, it is landlocked. He thought the UK was smaller, and it thought it was more rectangular than it is. That was a rectangular landmass.
Maybe he just meant it was full of squares.
Yeah, and he thought Ireland was bigger, which it's not. He thought it was half the size of the UK, and it's about a third the size of the UK. Idiot.
Yeah, but in the grand scheme of major geographical areas at the time,
that's
fine.
That's all right.
About right. Yeah.
He also came down on the wrong side of history with the "how big is the Earth" argument.
Big.
So in about 300 BC, you know, there was measurements done by Athanasius about the sun's angles at different locations, and he was able to measure the Earth's circumference to within 1% accuracy.
This guy was.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Not Strabo. But
The guy whose name we're not going to try to say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wait, within 1%?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's very impressive.
But he didn't like that theory. He came on down the side of a more modern, more contemporary scientist.
You fool.
Called Poseidonus, who in the
hang on. No. Sorry.
As in the god?
P-O-S-I-D-O-N-I-U-S. Poseidonius. Okay.
Yeah, so not... Not the
Poseidonus, not Poseidon, god of the sea.
Yeah, to be fair, I would come down on the side of Poseidon as well.
Absolutely,
if it comes to measuring the Earth.
In about the first century BC, he used observations from the stars instead, and he used fixed distances on the ground between various places that he definitely knew the right distances between.
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
And
he measured the Earth to be about 28% larger than it actually was.
Oh.
Which Strabo was on the side of.
Okay. Well, I'm really proud of the other guy for getting it so close.
Incredible. Anyway, that's all to say that Strabo, fascinating, learned man, father of geography, inventor of Oxbow Lakes, I'm assuming, is in there somewhere.
Oh, right. I forgot all about the Oxbow Lakes.
The most important geographical feature. I did think, actually, you know, I learned about them in geography in school.
Yeah.
I did think I would come across them a lot more frequently than I think I've probably seen one.
I taught them.
You taught?
Yeah, that was part of the curriculum when I was teaching.
Them, or you taught the lakes?
I taught the lakes.
Yeah.
I taught the lakes
about
how to flow.
Yeah.
Anyway, Strabo, important, lesser known figure in history who was definitely alive in 10 BCE.
Well, thank you for joining us. That's everything you'd ever need to know about things that the Romans were doing in the year 10 BCE, and also a few decades on either side.
And the only thing left to do is to light the torches, sound the gong, let off the trumpets.
Sorry, let off the trumpets.
Yeah.
Let them off.
Let them off. They've been working really hard.
Cue the Zeppelin. And...
And destroy the Zeppelin.
And then subsequently destroy it. And from the ashes of the exploded, destroyed Zeppelin, take the random number generator out of its box.
That's absolutely right.
Do the thing.
So we'll be back.
Good luck with the sound design for this.
And before we power up the random number generator, just a reminder that if you'd like to support the podcast, you can do that at patreon.com/randomlyhistory, where you can get access to bonus episodes.
There's more episodes coming, by the way. I've been working on the induction guide. There's one episode of the induction guide thus far.
I'd like to read that. I'm flying blind.
Talking about sound design, some beautiful sound design in the induction guide. Genuinely, this is not bullshit. You should check out the patreon.com/randomhistory.
When you hear the hippogriffs, there's gonna be a tear to your eye.
We've also had requests to do watch-alongs with Kingdom of Heaven and possibly Tombstone. So we are taking requests from movies.
Tomb Raider. I feel like that's kind of contemporary to history.
One of the most historical movies ever made. Yeah.
My vote is for Tomb Raider.
Yeah, shocking.
Okay, so the Zeppelin has crashed, and we are able now to gather up enough ashes to power the random number generator. And it is now powering up. And next week's year is... Oh, the Humanity, 1977.
Oh, 1977. Cool. The Humanity indeed. There's so much of it
this
then.
Is such a good reprieve from 10 BCE.
Oh.
I'm very happy with that.
I'm very happy with that. Bell bottoms, disco, end of list.
The Cold War.
The Cold War.
I might just do Rome again anyway. Let's find out what happened in 1977 in Rome.
The last days of disco in Rome. Oh, can't wait.
Brilliant. Join us next week.
Toodles.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.